Welcome to Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, hosted by Dr. Ryan Mauley and Travis Buzzell. Join us on this journey as we educate the patient population, inform today's medical providers, and inspire tomorrow's medical leaders through education and in-depth discussion. We can all discover today's best healthcare solutions. Now, sit back and enjoy Red Carpet Healthcare Solutions, Private Practice Podcasters.
Now, like, we're self-employed, so you are, like, pretty diligent, even though it's still expensive as you know what to, like, have healthcare, but it's like, okay.
Oh, I don't, by the way.
Do you just go without it?
Her and Daniel Paul, I need to do this. Can you talk to my wife and figure out how I can convince her? Because I'm all for getting rid of it.
But we have to offer it, like, for our employees, like, from a business.
You don't have to.
I know, but
from I don't.
Really? How does that work?
I don't believe in it.
No one pushes
back? I have to do my values. And so as a business owner, I do not believe in commercial insurance. Therefore, I don't have it for my family. I don't offer it for my employees. I just don't believe in it. I think it is an awful product that is detrimental to everybody. And it's predatory. And I don't believe in it. So I don't offer it for my employees. I offer them a stipend. We have a health share.
Yep.
Which has worked out great for us. And that's it.
You might be my new hero. Because seriously, it's like...
New tattoo.
Yeah.
Dr. Demers, you're going to get a new tattoo?
Right here. Right on my collarbone. Don't break it.
Perfect.
Break it. She'll fix it. No, honestly, though, I love what you're saying because, like, in the spirit of it, like, I'm with you and I believe it. But it's like the people that's just like, again, the general population, like, their thing is like, I need the lowest, like, monthly premium, right? But it's like, they don't understand.
Then get health share. Oh my God.
They don't.
It's a quarter of the price.
But they don't understand that low monthly premium means that when shit hits the fan and they actually need care, it's like $7,000-$10,000. It's like, do you realize what your out of pocket is? It's like, it's like, oh, it's not that. It's like, no, it's a game. And it's like you said, it's like predatory. It's like, no. Yeah. This isn't going to cost you. But then it's like, what do you think happens to that money? Would you think it just disappears? It's like, no, they make it like fraudulent that, okay, well, if you knew that you were only going to have to pay $68 a month for your healthcare plan, but you were going to owe $10,000, but you were never going to have to pay that in case you ever broke your leg. It's like, yeah, man, that's not how the real world works. So like you're on the hook no matter what. And like people don't realize that. And they continue to just feed into, well, whatever my lowest out of pocket, you know, is, this is what I'm going to do. And there's these huge deductibles and these donut holes and all these things but no one knows it's like everyone in this country almost has healthcare. No one knows what it actually is, what it does, what it covers, what it doesn't cover, what it actually costs, what the benefit is. But it's like, why is that?
I'm not.
Why do you think it is though? Why do you think it is? It's on purpose. It has been kept opaque. So everybody has to rely on the information giver, and the information giver is the insurance company. Yeah. So if all we know is what the insurance company that's, by the way, making money off of us is telling us, then we're like, okay, well, I mean, this is what they said they had to do. I don't know. So it's been intentionally kept opaque. Same with like our reimbursements, right? So I only do, I do Medicare and then cash pay surgery, right? And so how did I set my prices? Well, the only thing that's out there is the Medicare rates. So I base it off of Medicare rates because it's on purpose opaque for all of the commercial insurers. They will not, it's trade secrets, right? They won't share it. It's not published anywhere. It's nowhere, right? And so it's all intentional. it's even the RVU rate, it's all intentional, because you're like, well, I don't know what I've even make. I don't even like, how does this base on anything? They're keeping us in the dark on purpose.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you can try to go down that conspiracy theory, but it's not. I mean, it's total.
Follow the money. Things look weird, when things look fishy, follow the money. So everything, it's like the rule of thumb. Every single time you're like, that's kind of weird. And you start looking at it and you're like, oh. So same thing. People are like, well, why isn't regenerative medicine covered? It's like, well, because they can't make money off of it. Because it's your stuff.
Yeah.
They can't bottle it up and jack up the price. It's yours.
You know what Howie says? It's not about the money. It's about the money.
That's his dad. But I was just scrolling on my phone there. I was trying to find the physician's name. He posted something today on LinkedIn about how both of his children just recently had insurance claims. His son and his daughter. His daughter had to go to the emergency department. She's a D1 athlete somewhere. I can't remember what, but she was having dizziness. And the bill for some labs, a CT scan, which I think the CT scan should have cost $400, the labs a couple hundred dollars, and an ER doctor's consultation, which lasted about 10, 15 minutes at most, maybe right. $500, $600, but whatever you want to say. The bill was like $13,000, and the insurance covered, I think, $5,000 or $6,000, and they wanted him to pay the rest. He's like, I'm not paying the rest. And then his son, I think he had some type of procedure done, and it was, again, astronomical, and the insurance only covered such, and it was just like, this is happening every single day. Health care, you know, insurance is supposed to help our patients. No, premiums go up every year. Deductibles go up every year. Reimbursements go down every year for physicians. They go up every year for hospitals. And now we're going to allow, and we've allowed this for a while, insurance companies to own hospitals. If that doesn't seem like that is a bit of a, you know, conflict of interest, I don't know what would be.
I mean, even above and beyond that, I mean,
it's called vertical integration. It's not against the law. It's just vertical integration.
What is that?
Yep. It's just vertical integration, guys. It's not illegal. it's not like a monopoly or anything.
It's seriously, it is. It's wild, though.
We're going to employ all the physicians, right? Give them enough money to entice them to sign on, which has happened. I mean, close to 80% of physicians now are employed. So again, that's intentional as well, right? So that they can plant the seed. Now they have this, you know, non-compete that's going to tie them up. So if they do want to move because they're unhappy, they're going to have to relocate their entire family, and no one wants to do that, right? So it's all been masterfully planned.
And these massive groups that somehow procure their tax exempt classification,
whatever. Nonprofits like UPMC,
the nonprofits. It's like, they're taking like $500 million a year more in tax credits than the quote unquote charity care that they provide. It's like, okay, guys, like, has it just gotten so big that your voice is just irrelevant or no one cares? It's like, it's like one or the other, because it's super frustrating, because it's like, anyone who can read can see it. Right. Anyone who's experienced it or ever walked into any of these places has felt it. Right. Like, very rarely do you ever hear, like,
you know what we need to do? We need to get Jay to put like a boiler point thing on here. So that when we get to these points in the podcast where like tension is rising, like I can feel it right now.
Yeah.
This is where we need to, like, about it's like Hulk it's out. The tea kettle's about to just like start whistling. This is where we need to transition into like the title, which is the healthcare solution. So. Yeah. Dr. Demers, you've done an amazingly beautiful job of listening to, like, throughout your career, you've pivoted, you've transitioned from, hey, you were balls to the wall out of the gates. You were like, I'm going to be my own boss. I love that. Super entrepreneurial. Then you did what you needed to do for that kind of mid portion of your career. But then you realized that wasn't the right thing. And you pivoted again in 2017, 18 to going back and becoming a student again, learning regenerative medicine and thinking outside the box, which is truly what I try to say is the solution. Like you have to start thinking outside the box, because if you want to just play this volume game, which a lot of surgeons are continuing to play, and it's a recipe for
disaster.
Why is the physician burnout rate as high as it is? Why is physician suicide the highest of any in the country?
Oh my God, we're so good at it, right?
Yeah, and by the way, orthopedic surgeons lead it, 28.2%. So I think I've put that into every single podcast that we've done since we started this. Yeah. And there's a reason, right? Because we're following the wrong thing, and we're doing the wrong things with, like, just get on that treadmill, run a little bit faster. You know, we can do, we'll just do more cases, right? If 6 joints wasn't enough, we'll do 8. If 8 wasn't enough, we'll do 12. If 12 isn't enough, we'll do 14 in a day. I am exhausted, and I just did 7 today. Most people would consider me lazy because I did 7 joint replacements today. Today's standards.
So we've been gaslit, right? We've been told that we have to do this, that we're not actually... that our needs don't matter, that if we have to eat, God forbid, that that's not okay. If we have to go to the bathroom, that's not okay. That we've been taught and we've been groomed through our entire medical school, entire residency, fellowship, to not listen to our bodies, not listen to our intuition. We've been told we're wrong. You know, you were just talking about how you went into the bean counter's office and they're like, oh, you've been losing us money. We all know that's absolutely freaking not true, right? I've made that damn hospital that I worked for, you know, millions of dollars. And they told me the same thing. And I was like, I don't believe it.
They're reading out of the same playbook, right? They're like, let's just tell them they're losing money. They'll fall for this one.
Right. It's gaslighting. It's telling people that what they're feeling is not true because it doesn't fit the other person's agenda, right? Yeah. We've been groomed to do, just put your head down and work harder. If you ask questions, you're a disruptive physician. If you're like, wait a second, this, what about my patient? This isn't right. You're going to be non-renewed, right? Your contract is just going to be
shut up and dribble.
Oh, you're not getting fired. Right?
That's what it comes down to.
Preach.
So,
and then the last thing that I just came, like, I just thought about is, like, we've been so railroaded that as physicians, we now are doing the job of the insurance companies, telling the patients what they can and cannot have without getting paid.
Yeah.
So I'm like, so all the physicians are now doing the job of the insurance company and they're not getting paid.
Yeah. We're the bad guys just too. Sorry, your surgery wasn't approved.
Seriously?
Right?
No.
Because it's not medically necessary that you have. I mean, we've all experienced it within our practices. Yeah. I mean, you've experienced it with your father. Yeah. I've experienced it with both my parents, right? Oh, he doesn't need an echo done. The guy can't walk 50 feet because he's short of breath.
But it's so interesting that we've all been groomed to think that it's our job. You know, I had, my dad was asking his orthopedic surgeon for an MRI because I was going to do some treatments on him. And he was like, you know, telling the orthopedic surgeon, he's like, well, you know, I think I'm going to go do some regenerative medicine. And he's like, well, it's my fiduciary duty to tell you that's going to cost a lot of money. And I can't in good conscience tell you that that's okay. I was like, and then he was like, by the way, the physician is my daughter. She's an orthopedic surgeon.
Fiduciary duty.
Yeah. I got your fiduciary.
I know. And I was like, I'm pretty sure it's not your that isn't, you are not a fiduciary. First of all, you're a doctor.
Yeah.
And it is your duty to do no harm and to care for the patient. Not look in his wallet and tell him what he can and cannot afford.
That sounds like a hospital CEO says CFO. That's my fiduciary. They use that word to make it sound like they're looking out for your best interest.
I can tell
it's
you. Like,
it's all bullshit.
Very confidently if you took a survey, just because, like, I mean, here, yeah, I've been back and doing, you know, our company since 2018. Actually, like, right when we met Dr. Molly, like right at the end of 2017 when you transitioned, but like all over the country, in from private practices into hospital employed physicians. I mean, I can tell you with absolute certainty. I mean, and I know a lot of them, more so in the spine world, but literally all over the country. Hands down, every single private physician that we ever did like business with, compared to, by the way, still great people and good surgeons on the employed side, the private physicians are 100%, without a doubt, over the last 12 years, 15 years of me having these conversations, way happier, staff way happier, just in general. And if you asked any one of those employed physicians outside of like, depending upon who was around and if they didn't want to lose their job at that current point, none of them are happy. Literally nope. None of them. It is so it's just like, it is even crazier to me that they have created this sort of like death trap where these people who are extraordinary and so smart and intelligent and all of the things feel trapped to the point where they're like, well, this is my only option. I'm just going to be miserable and hate my life. It's just like, how
forever?
Yeah. Yeah. How the heck did we get
devastating?
There? Yeah.
Yeah. And so that's what I always, that's why I'm so passionate about regenerative medicine, because it allows for another avenue. It's your parachute plan. It's your way out to carve out this little area to dip your toe in and say, oh my gosh, there is another way that I can help patients that's not covered, and it's amazing, and it's great, and I can care deeply for my patients. And oh, by the way, I can actually breathe, because I don't have to see 35 patients a day. I don't have to see, you know, I don't have to do 7 joints or 10 joints or 14 joints a day. It's not a volume solution. It's a quality solution, both for the patient and the doctor, right? And so for me, I'm so passionate in helping physicians understand that there is another option, and they don't have to quit their day job, and they can just try it out a little bit and try it out for their patients, help them out, you know, take care of their patients another way.
So
and shortcut this conundrum that we're in with this insurance driven care.
How would you suggest, right now we're going to come full circle here, like the solution, right? How do we, what happened to Travis's thing? Oh, you didn't bring your charger.
That, dude, it was at 98%. My MacBook obviously is just horrible. I don't know what's going on.
He's still here, but you can't see him anymore.
I can see his legs.
They're thick. She's like, oh, yes, they are.
I squat a lot.
So anyways, to kind of come full circle, like I love that transition point. Like if, say, myself or another orthopedic surgeon that's practicing what I'm going to just call traditional orthopedics, how do we start to transition into like regenerative medicine? Like what would be, if you said, hey, you got to get this one book, it's yellow, it's called Regenerative Medicine for Dummies, or is there a course that you would highly recommend to be kind of like intro into this?
Yeah, there's a couple of courses. Number one, there is a couple of bars, right? And so the bar to entry is, number one, using ultrasound for injection-based therapies is a have to, right?
Okay. We're doing that. We're doing that at our practice. We instituted that a couple
years ago.
And
so if you're doing that, you've already passed that first kind of big hurdle. And then number two, learning about the, I think the closer nuances of the who, what, when, where, why, I think is really still a little opaque. And it's a lot. Unfortunately or fortunately, there's a ton of information out there and a ton of research supporting the treatments that we're talking about. Unfortunately, a lot of orthopedic surgeons have had confirmational bias where it's been in our journals, and because you don't do it or don't know about it, you don't attend to it, and you flip the page. You're like, yep, don't do that, next. And so then you're like, you're looking back, you're like, oh my God, that was there and I just ignored it. Holy crap. So it is out. There's 144 randomized controlled trials showing efficacy of PRP for musculoskeletal care. So there's a crap ton out there. To learn about it, I think there's a couple of really great conferences. The first is near and dear to my heart, the Interventional Orthobiologics Foundation. I was past president of that foundation.
Put that right here, Jay. He's going to put stuff on the screen so that physicians can see. Like, what? Can you say that again?
Interventional Orthobiologics Foundation.
Okay.
So that's the one that I did all of the training, the injection-based, the ultrasound and fluoro-guided injection-based training with. And I subsequently became president, and they have an amazing annual conference that is just like mind-blowing. And it's all the latest science on the state of the nation or the world on regenerative medicine.
Where is that located?
So it was just recently, and it was in Phoenix this year. I think they may go back to Denver, but they've been in Phoenix the last couple of years. It's usually that, first or second week in February.
Okay. So next year, and then going to that conference.
Yeah. The other one that's coming up is TOBI, which is the Orthobiologic Institute.
In Florida?
And they have a great conference. That one is in August, and it's going to be in Vegas this year. And that's another like whole, it just is coming from the orthopedic world where you're like, oh yeah, that's like pixie dust, whatever. That crap doesn't work, which is A, not true. And B, there's a ton of research behind it. And it's a field unto itself. But I think the best recommendation, if you're already using ultrasound guided injections, like, then you can just start, right? Make sure you have a good kit that can give you good high platelet counts and concentration, and then just use it where you would either use cortisone or hyaluronic acid and just change it out. Be like, hey, and what I tell my patients is, especially like the knee patients, we know that PRP outperforms hyaluronic acid and cortisone at every time point. At every time point. And so if they want the best, if they want something that's going to outperform what they're currently getting, then they really should consider platelet-rich plasma injections. And then there's some really compelling data that we should be using cellular therapy like bone marrow concentrate. And some of that data, some of the outcomes, 15-year outcome data is really, really compelling to consider that it may be approaching outcomes of knee replacement, which is shocking, right?
Yeah.
So do I think it's going to replace arthroplasty? No. Do I think it's a continuum? And we can actually serve the patients where they're at, delay or avoid. It's a disease-modifying treatment regimen. And those patients who are never going to need arthroplasty, great. But there's so many people that are so far down the line that we're not going to save everybody, right? It's not like, oh my gosh, you have one PRP injection and you're fixed, you're healed. That's not the case. It's changing the natural history of the disease. The sooner you can intervene, the sooner that you can change that natural history instead of marching down. And then, oh my God, you put cortisone in it and accelerate your arthritis. We know that happens.
Yeah, for
so
sure.
Let's not do that unless you want more arthroplasty. But the need for arthroplasty is outpacing the ability to do that, oh, right?
100%. I mean, our numbers are going to double by 2030. And sorry, I'm not doing 14 tomorrow. I'm not.
No. And honestly, you know, while it's a really good surgery, it's not perfect. And I think that if all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. If you have other options for treatment and you can kind of weed out those people that don't need it with other treatments, and if you don't have that tool in your toolbox, then you don't have that tool. And you're like, well, I guess we have, you know, a hammer or nothing. So we'll just use the hammer. Cool. Just like, I think really, if you think about this, with the invention of the cardiac stent, how many people now get bypass surgery? Significantly less, right?
Yeah. You don't see those scars that often anymore.
Exactly. So for these percutaneous interventions where you start sooner, then you can avoid that long-term need for that big surgery. And then, you know, we can maybe keep pace with the need for arthroplasty because, you know, those huge varus and valgus deformities, like that's not going to be solved with injection-based therapies. Sure. That's that the horse is already out of the barn, yeah. Right? We can kind of maybe do some symptom management, but honestly, an arthroplasty is a great procedure for that patient. But I think it's going to go the same way where as we go, we're going to get to these patients sooner. We're going to have better ways to sort that disease out and modify that disease so that maybe we never have to do a quadruple bypass, right? We're going to have disease prevention. We're going to be talking about diet and exercise and anti-inflammatory eating and, you know, biomarkers and all of these things because arthritis is not a solved problem. We don't even really know, like, who's going to do great and who's not going to do great because we haven't even really pulled apart those phenotypes. We haven't looked at those biomarkers. We haven't really decided all of those things. Like, we're trying and we're working on it, but it's still, you know, an art and a science.
So if you're suggesting, like, if I'm going to take this on, right, and I'm my 2026 goal is to start a regenerative subset of my practice.
Yeah.
How are you marketing this, right? Like, because people know me as the guy that puts in a lot of metal and plastic, right? Is this going to be kind of like, oh, did he start hugging trees? Did he start like smoking a lot of pot? Like, because I mean, that's the perception, right?
That it's woo-woo, right? Yeah.
And you've heard it. I've heard it. I don't believe that. But how do you take a traditional practice? Fortunately, I think our practice is set up beautifully for this. It's called Whole Health Orthopedics. We have a wellness institute that we assess all of our patients before surgery. We work on the entire human being, right? We work on weight loss, diabetes management. We work on smoking cessation, malnutrition, all those things that, you know, aren't even talked about by traditional orthopedic practices. So I feel like we've already got the segue. But how would you, if you were in my shoes, how would you attack this?
I would just offer that service.
But are you?
Do you offer HA?
Yeah, we do offer HA. Yeah.
Okay. So just transition all of those patients over to PRP because it's better.
So Doc, I've got a question for you because I mean, obviously PRP, like, you know, for people listening and obviously, you know, this, like, you've been doing this for a while now, like, you know, PRP has been around for a little while and, you know, it's definitely becoming more mainstream in terms of like people like you creating these, you know, these offerings and these practices where it's like, okay, like, you know, regenerative medicine and here's kind of what we're talking about and better educating the patient on like what exactly it is and what it does. And like you said, it's not one treatment, right? Like it's like, oh, you get a PRP injection, you're cured. It's like, it's a series of things. One thing that I've noticed, and how do you maybe potentially overcome, you know, the pricing thing, right? Because, okay, yeah, it's cash pay and it's out of pocket, but, you know, it can be expensive. How do you build the value in? Because there are other people.
That's a great question because my patients that are getting HA, they're going to be saying, well, that was covered by my insurance and now I'm going to have to pay for this new thing?
Yeah, building the value in, but not just building the value in of like, okay, from a science perspective, the medicine piece of it and why it's more effective and, you know, then explaining, well, if it's better than this and it's not covered, but then additionally, and I think you know this too, it's like, just like with insurance companies, there's like, there's here, then there's here, right? And so there's like this whole thing where there's like, okay, there's the cost of the materials, the time and everything else, but then there's the value of everything else that you're getting. Like, how do you figure out that price point? Because there have been, and we know some of these people that have gone to bigger cities, you know, in comparison to where we live, that are like just talking about like, you know, an obscene amount of money that they've spent to do some of these things. And then you've seen a guy like maybe 2 hours from them that it's like way more reasonable in terms of just like pricing that. Like, so how do you do that?
Yeah. So first of all, when you're talking about cash pay services, I mean, I'm guessing your wellness is cash pay services. Yes.
It's actually not. It's all at this point, it's actually insurance based. So
So you're hemmed in a bit. Yeah. And you can't really offer everything that the patient needs, would be my guess. And so
yeah.
For where you're at, I think, and what I recommend is really creating that vehicle, which is a cash-based business. So a separate business altogether, that actually has the mechanism to take cash, and is apart from any insurance contracts that you have.
Yep.
So that's really important, right? A separate TIN that doesn't have any insurance contracts is really important to start with. And then ultimately, everybody's reticence about talking about money has to do with us, right? It's an uncomfortable subject because we're making it uncomfortable. And really, it's not that uncomfortable. Like, how much is the price of bread? It depends on what kind of bread you want. You want Wonder Bread? You want, you know, the wheat bread? You want the artesian sourdough bread? Like, what are you looking for? And it when we come back to the patient, it depends on their values and what their goals are. So I do a consultation, and I can't do it any faster than 36 minutes. So when I do a consultation, and I talk pretty quick, but you go through this goal-directed consultation where it's like, okay, what can't you do now? What do you want to be doing? Why do you want to be doing it? And what's the mechanism for what we're going to get you? How are we going to get you to the goal?
And that, right? That consultation is cash based.
It can be cash based or it can be insurance based. Okay. But it's, I mean, I only take Medicare, right?
Sure.
So, it's a little bit tricky with Medicare because if they call my office and say, I want that stem cell consultation, they're going to pay cash for it.
Yeah.
If they come and say, hey, what can I do about my knee arthritis? Then I'm going to give them every single option. I'm going to give them, you know, cortisone, which I don't do, HA, which I'm considering not doing, PRP, cellular therapy, arthroplasty. And I'm going to give all the pros and cons. And I'm going to say, hey, you know, these are the things that we can achieve with each treatment. These are the things we cannot achieve with each treatment. And these are the actual risks. These are actual benefits. And it doesn't matter to me. I can do any or all of them. Here's my recommendations for you based on your goals. And here's what I would say. And then I'm very happy to throw the insurance companies under the bus and say, unfortunately, your insurance company doesn't value this treatment. It's uncovered. However, I do think this is the best treatment for you to achieve the goals that you'd like to achieve, that yeah. you don't want to do surgery, that you don't think you're a candidate for surgery. You're scared to death of surgery. You'd like to do anything to avoid surgery. Here's what these injection-based therapies can do. 2 days of downtime. You know, then you, this is an expectation by 50% better by 8 weeks. And this is going to last 3 years. And this is the price. And they're like, oh, okay, well, shoot. Yeah, let's do that. Without assigning value, using the word expensive, cheap, reasonable, that's us assigning value to their goals.
Right.
And I think that's a really hard thing to kind of understand. That what some people think is cheap is not cheap, and some people think is expensive is not expensive. If we achieve their goals, some people would pay any amount of money to achieve that goal, yep. right?
It's all relative.
And some people are funny about money, and even if they want the goal, they have hangups about money, and they have millions in the bank, and they still only will pay, you know, $60.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, great. Perfect. I guess I'm not the person for you. Here's what $60 gets you. One cortisone injection and voila.
I just have to tell you, like, that last piece, like, I love that. Like, maybe I'm not the, you know, the surgeon for you. Maybe I'm not the orthopedic provider for you. Maybe I'm not for you. I feel like we as a society have become so, like, yes, driven in, like, particularly in healthcare, like, we almost feel like guilty for not providing anything, that it's sort of just like, when there might even just be a patient that you meet. And I know that Dr. Molly,
you've seen this though, right? You've seen this transformation just in me. Like, and yeah, I speak very definitely. Much like you do definitely. Now, Ariana, where I have no problem telling a patient, I don't know if I'm the right surgeon for you.
Yeah.
It's, a different conversation, but I'm just like, you're not buying into my values of wellness, right? Like, you don't want to lose weight. You're not willing to stop smoking. You think that you can come in here and demand that I fix your hip or knee. Also have a choice here. I'm not going to operate on you. I wish you the best of luck. It's nothing personal, but our values don't align. So it's just not going to be a good relationship.
Yep. And honestly, I do all of that wellness ahead of time, right? Because I'm now relying on their body for my treatments. So I'm like, all right, here's what we're going to do. You're going to buy into all of my things. We're going to do the anti-inflammatory diet. We're going to optimize your hormones. We're going to do like all of these things to make sure so I can stack the deck in your favor as best as I know how with all the science that I know to have the best outcomes. Wow. And in my data collection,
another level now.
Yeah.
No, I know. I'm like I said, I'm way off the reservation. But no, I'm an expert, right? And I want the best outcomes. And then, so I'm always deep diving into the science of how do we attain the best outcomes? How do we do that? And it's part of the package. And so, yeah, some people are like, oh, I got my PRP for $800. I'm like, oh, well, what did, you know, how many platelets did, what was your platelet count? How many billion platelets did you get? They're like,
I don't know.
Well, right. You know, no, you idea. Just brought up something that I didn't even think about, like, regardless of numbers, but like not everybody's PRP is going to be the same like his and mine or yours. Like if you are not a healthy person, right? Like we've all operated on those people that have what we call shitty protoplasm. Their tissues falling apart, their bones are garbage. That you try to, you know, tendons.
And really they have no business having surgery.
Yeah.
And someone should have had that hard talk with them a long time ago and like, listen, ho-hos are not for you.
So I've been having that conversation, but like what you're suggesting too is like harvesting PRP from you at this state is not going to be as valuable as if we can get you to this state, right? Yeah, and get you into a less inflamed state, a healthier metabolic state. Man, this is good stuff.
Absolutely.
I like the conversation with the patient. This is where I just feel like where you're taking your practice and where I know that you've gone in terms of the practice. Like for me, being sort of on the outside, but also on the inside and just seeing it in a lot of different places, like the conversation is just different. And I just feel like, yes, it is a hard conversation, but the transparency it's better for the patient, it's better for you, but it's also better for like just managing the expectations, right? Like no one sits there and I'm just saying, you know, doc, for you, like just your intensity and your passion for it, like for me, people tend to meet that, right? If you have a personal trainer who's like, okay, two more, you're like, you know, come on, let's go. You know, it's just like, it's seriously for if you have to really be like bought into this and willing to go and do the extra things to get the outcome that you want. And if you aren't, I might not be the person for you.
Yeah.
And that's okay. Yeah. But not having that conversation, to your point, is where I think some of the bad things happen. And that's where, you know, just going back to the, you know, the beginning of the conversation of like the insurance companies and that sort of stuff. And I feel like that's where some of these providers have gotten. They're just like, who cares? I've got 59 people on my schedule this morning. I'm just going to see all of them. And yep. You check this, you check that. I'm moving you over to this direction. It's just a way different conversation. It's a different interaction.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. Well, and then when you get paid for your time, right? Then you're super motivated to like do whatever it takes to take care of this patient. You're like, oh man, you're paying for the best of me. I'm gonna show up for you as best I can, and you know, think outside the box, do whatever we need to do to really make it happen for you. And so they do; they get great care because and they're paying for they come away from my consultation like, oh my goodness, you know, if I have an hour with them, like how much can we talk about? God, like, I don't care. We can talk about your knee and your ankle, and we can talk about your back, or we can talk about your whatever, your dog. I don't care what we talk about, but you know, you get to know the patient, and you can then be able to care for the patient that much better.
So my final question for you is job satisfaction score, like 0 to 10 in 2000 and I'm trying to remember your timeline here. So I think it was 17 ish when you said bye-bye, right?
16? Yeah. Microphone drop quit. Yep. Yeah.
So then versus now.
Oh yeah. So, you know, I was miserable enough to walk away from medicine. And so job satisfaction was like nearing zero, right? Like I hated it. I begged my husband I'm like, please don't make me go to work today. Please don't make me go to work. He's like, don't you have patients? I'm like, yes, I think you have to go. I'm like, please don't make me go. And I hated it. I hated every step of it. And so my job satisfaction was zero, right? Zero, because I was willing to give it all up and go sell flip-flops on the beach. And now
that's funny that say, like mine is I'd flip hamburgers. Like you just think of just some menial task that, you know,
I'd work at Lowe's.
Great. Very little stress.
Help people.
So that'd be awesome. Yeah. Although people can be jerks at Lowe's and Home Depot. Like seems like a great job, but all right, sorry to interrupt. Continue. But now what are you at?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so my job satisfaction now is awesome, right? You know, I love my job. I love what I do. I love that I get to think about all the different ways that I can help people. I love doing the business of it, right? It's fun. It's great. I love creating systems. I love doing all of the CEO work as well. And so it's phenomenal. It's phenomenal. And, you know, if you were to ask me what my number was to go back to being employed.
Employed you.
Are we talking like professional franchise athletes, like 30 million a year type numbers? Or
I mean, it would be, yeah. Like, I think my number's maybe 10 million
per year.
Yeah, per year.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
I would do that hellhole for 10 million a year.
You have no idea. You don't want to know what I would do for 10 million a year.
Jay, this is where we edit the podcast.
Yeah.
No,
maybe that's what we call this podcast. Like, what would you do for $10 million a year? 17 to 1. That's what I would do.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and I do like right. So it's so fun, and the sky's the limit. And people are like, oh God, I can't wait till retire. I'm like, I don't think I'm going to retire.
No, you've been reinvigorated. I can tell just listening to you and your story And the beauty of this too is like your patients are the benefactors of this. You're the benefactor, your family's the benefactor, your staff's the benefactor, but your patients, right? Yeah. We went into medicine to help people and patients. And
exactly.
When you show up Monday morning after like Sunday night, you're excited about going to work on Monday because you feel true purpose, passion, you're driven, you feel valued. Because I feel like that's the biggest thing right now with physicians is we feel so freaking devalued.
Yeah.
Right. By everybody.
By design.
By the system.
That's part of the gaslighting. That's part of the grooming.
Yep.
You are.
Is that you're groomed to tolerate horrible things because you don't value yourself enough because you've been told you're
correct.
Worthless.
Well, but these health systems, they do it, and I see it. It's like
Well, they'll get another horse, right?
You make, you know, I mean, whatever. I mean, a very busy orthopedic surgeon in our area. I mean, you might make $850,000, $900,000. Maybe that's a lot, but $800,000 a year. It's like, what are you bitching about? It's like, okay, first of all, no, it has nothing to do with that. It's like, it's the day-to-day thing, but they continually bring that back to you. Like, well, you should be busy. You should do this. You should do that. And they try to bring it back to the value of that. But it's just so funny. Like, you know, I know we were kind of joking around about it, but like $10 million a year, it's like for what you do and for the revenue that's generated for the facilities, like that number isn't totally out of the realm of like feasibility with the insurance companies and with the health systems. It's like
there's so much more that goes into it. And like the small percentage that all, yes, to most people, what they make, that might seem like a lot of money, but for what you do and the value that you add to the people and all of the things that go into it, it's like, there's the disparity is just, it's really gross, quite honestly.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's why I think these conversations are happening. And quite honestly, I'm glad they're happening because they need to, because the more we talk about it, I think the more people that's see
the key,
it,
right? The conversations like, need to keep come happening. On.
Like let's keep pushing the needle a little bit. And the more and more we do it, you know, perhaps we all go to cash pay one day and it's like, you know what, insurance companies?
I mean, I don't you know, guys should go to cash pay. Why are you not cash pay?
Who's going to fill that jet? You know what I
that,
mean?
That'll be an offline conversation. But
so the only other thing I wanted to point out, Travis, is you are also like still buying in. When you call physicians providers,
yeah,
that little lexicon that has been introduced means that provider of services, it's a good and services, it's a transactional relationship, yeah, and we're all the same.
Yeah.
And that's not true. Physicians yeah. are not, nurse practitioners are not PAs, right? And so I'm always a physician. I'm never a provider. I'm not a provider of services. I'm a doctor. I'm a physician. But the insurance companies have brought that in to devalue yeah. us and say, oh, you're, yeah. Again, you're interchangeable. You're right? just a provider. It yeah. is intentional.
See, that's something so that we do every
I'm
day.
I'm also
that
railing I'm... against that.
Yeah. No,
not, so, I'm not a provider. I'm a physician.
All right. So we've got three titles, working titles. We've got,
what would you do for $10
million? What would you do for $10 million? 17 to one and providers. I'm not a provider. I think that's it.
I'm not a provider.
I'm not a provider.
So, I think my vote is I'm not a provider.
I think we give Ariana the final say on which title. We'll send all this to you. Jay will send it yeah, to no you. Worries. He's our he does all the post-production stuff. He makes it look pretty.
Sure.
But hey, I just want to thank you for taking time out of your personal life, yeah. your professional life to spend a couple hours with us. Because I mean, I could keep talking about this forever. You know Matthew Ray Scott by any chance?
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's actually coming into town. I'm picking him up at the airport here in less than 12 hours. So tomorrow we're going to spend a couple days kind of with plans to take that practice yeah. to the next level. So, but I definitely want to speak to you kind of offline, would love to come to a course that maybe you're teaching at and just really pick your brain, from the regenerative medicine standpoint. But again, yeah. just want to thank you for your time. I mean, it's been awesome.
Yeah, it's my pleasure. Yeah. So I'll send you a couple of links, not only just for the courses that I think are really good, helpful courses, but also I'll send you a link and we can chat about that. Because I have a physician education course for exactly that. Like, how do you start a cash practice? And we have a lot of really good doctors who are drowning, and this is the way out. This is the life preserver that can keep you afloat and reinvigorate you and allow you to care for your patients in the way that you know you can. You just have been handicapped and hamstrung by the insurance companies and creating that vehicle of cash practice, the mechanism in which you can offer something outside of the standard care. It's for me, it's a no-brainer, but it's really, really important to have that parachute plan. And even if you don't use it fully, like my example is my husband is an OBGYN, right? And so I see this front and center and they're like, oh, you're the worthless doctor and blah, blah, blah. And he has a cash practice that he does kind of one day a week on the side awesome. Doing hormones and you know, whatever, some aesthetics and that kind of stuff. And yet he's like too scared to like pull the trigger and go. And, but you know, now the hospital is jerking him around with contracting and he's like,
oh,
you know,
boy.
I don't know. Maybe I'll just quit. There we go. And maybe I'll just do this cash practice thing.
Have they met his wife?
Yes. I know. Yeah. I know, right? But ultimately, it gives you that leverage to be able to actually walk away and to actually not be having those golden handcuffs. Whether you use it or not, it gives you the actual structure and ability to say, yeah, actually, I don't need you, insurance company. Yeah, actually, hospital, I'm good. I'm out. And they're like, well, but yeah, mic drop, right? And so like he told me this morning, he's like, yeah, I think I'm actually gonna, you know, do this different thing. And I'm gonna send back the contract and tell him that no dice. And I can just quit anytime. I'm just gonna do this cash thing. I'm like, great.
It's like you're finally rubbing off on him, huh?
I know, after like 1,000 years. He's my hardest client, right? But yeah, it's so rewarding to be able to teach doctors how to save themselves and how to fish themselves out of this really significant conundrum that we're in. And that we don't need saving from anybody else. We can do it ourselves.
We need to have her like as a regular guest to come on here.
I love it. I'm like, I'm ready to run through a wall right now. I'm ready to go.
Let's do this. Yeah, absolutely. But it is, it's so important. And then you have leverage and you have autonomy and you have all of the things. And you can do what you set out to do, which is care for patients appropriately.
I think the biggest thing is your proof.
Yeah.
That's it. We can talk all we want about this.
You've had every model, right?
You've done it. Like you went from this weird circumstance to you got to do this. No, I don't have to do this. And I'm going to pivot here to, okay, I'm going to go this path. And no, I hated it too. Like you have sort of, I don't say reinvented, because I feel like you have been who you are through the whole thing, through that whole process. Yeah. But it to me is like, you are proof. You are doing it. And quite honestly, I mean, you're doing it in probably one of the hardest places in this country to do it. I mean, California, historically, in terms of like costs and everything else that has gone into it, it's very challenging.
Oh yeah.
And you're killing absolutely it. And it's like,
yeah, and people always like give me a hard time.
Yeah, always.
They're like, oh, well, you don't understand. My patients won't pay. I'm like, that's just not true. You just haven't demonstrated value.
Yep.
Because my median income in my town of 20,000 is $33,000.
If I'm telling you what.
Per week?
I know it's per California.
Month? No, median income in my town is $33,000, and I live in California. Wow. Yeah. So it's a very under-employed, undereducated town, and you know we just make it work, and it's because I've demonstrated value. That, you know, people who can't afford to take time off to have surgery can now have treatments that can allow them to actually just get better. And then, you know, they have downtime of 2 days. They're like, you know, doc, I was working hurt anyways. If I'm not going to ruin it and this is actually going to make it actually heal, I can still work hurt. Like what's a little, you know, pain. Mm-hmm. So it's been really, helpful, and people have a very skewed idea like, oh, I need to live in Beverly Hills. It's like, no, you need to explain and show that it's a valuable treatment that can change people's lives and be done with it.
Yeah, I'll say this. I'll end with this, that I think that, you know, you are so good at demonstrating that value to them through that conversation that I think that's the biggest like differentiator. I mean, it just in this conversation, I mean, I can just tell, I can just feel like the passion and the education that goes into it. Like that sort of level of commitment on your end certainly is the differentiator for patients looking for alternative options, as opposed to, you know, here's the menu. It's like, no, here's why. And this is what this looks like. And I feel like, you know, that's the difference. So like you have mastered building in that value, because I, for me, just in the conversation intrinsically, like, you are the value add. So I think that that's awesome. That's incredible.
Awesome.
I don't know how better to end it than that. I thought you were going to maybe just tell us what you would do for $10 million, but I don't think we should go there on this episode. Maybe that's like the...
I'll go swim the lake right now. We'll drive down there. And I'd do it for $1,000. I'd throw a football with you.
Well, you've done that before. So, but anyways, thank you again for joining us, taking time out. Just to hang around for a couple minutes. We're going to do our real little quick closing. And then, I just want to thank all of our guests for tuning in. Obviously, hit the like button, hit the share button, subscribe. And if leave comments too, we want to hear about other guests that you think would be great on this podcast. We're always looking for new guests. We have a cool one next week. I don't want to even.
This is all I'll give you.
That's all you need if you're on LinkedIn. But have a great night, and we'll see you soon.
Thanks.
As a disclaimer, this podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and the materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content on this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice from any medical condition they have, and they should seek the assistance of their healthcare professional from any such conditions.